Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Martinez, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all here today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we have two great guests here to introduce. So it is first Antoine Nguyen, founder and CEO of EquaCare, pioneering AI-powered precision medicine to close the gender health gap and transform evidence into equitable healthcare. And then I'm very happy also to introduce Patrick Over Ikonga, CTO, Strongwave Technology and Innovation Director, X-Suite Tech Empowerment Network, empowering Africa's next generation from Nigeria and the world through tech education. But first, now let's kick things off with a song selected by Patrick.
Through the world, over land and over sea, I see different cultures and different people's ways. I was born where the sun never sets and never rises. I was born where the heat is like a second skin. Crying on the streets, automobiles are making noise. The land is growing dry and weak, spirits dying low. The forefathers are calling me and never tire, never weaken. The pride in me is bursting loose, an African boy. Farm, my father called me down behind a tree. He said, prostrate at my feet and say a few prayers. Then he told me all the stories of my brave ancestors. Said, look into my eyes, son, you were born to be great. So in the twilight I went home behind my father with a hoe, listening to the songs of birds. Whispers of the night, I was singing seven goats, seven beats, seven carries, seven nuts, seven legs. That's all I've got. I'm an African boy. Over sea, over land, over mountains in the wild. I'll be brave and I'll be strong. I'm an African boy.
Morning. I'm very happy to welcome Patrick Over Ikonga. Welcome to the radio show.
Thank you very much, Annabelle. It's nice
to
be here.
Thank you. I would like to introduce you and for a few words, and I know that it needs some more words, but therefore I have some really great questions for you, I hope. Patrick Owori-Konga is a Nigerian technology leader who believes innovation creates its greatest impact when it expands opportunities for others. As CTO of Strongwave Technology Limited and Innovation and Program Director at Axwitak Empowerment Network, he combines software engineering with social innovation to equip young people with future-ready digital skills through free technology training initiatives for children and underserved communities. He is helping shape a generation of creators, problem solvers, and change makers. Patrick demonstrates that technology is not only about building software, it is about building people, unlocking potential, and creating lasting impact. So, Patrick, welcome again. So really happy to having you here. And we drive the first three questions always to all of our participants. So my first question to you is, and you will say, yes, of course, Annabelle, what does sustainable empowerment mean to you personally? And how do you live sustainability to others through your work or life?
Okay, sustainable empowerment is when you are able to empower someone in such a way whereby he can go on to do the same thing to the next set or the next generation. Where I'm from would say if you give a man a fish, he will only eat for a day. If you teach the man to fish, he will be able to do that for the rest of his life. And when it comes to sustainable empowerment, the whole of the idea we have, or my idea, the idea of Esquitec is that we want to make sure that the next generation is better off than our generation, as we try to be better off than the ones that gave it to us.
This is great, and I'm sure that you could have ex described this in hours, describing and explaining really in detail what you're doing to the children, for example. So
Basically, we live in a digital age, and many of our priorities is getting digital literacy and reducing the digital divide. So, we do multiple things. One is we teach the kids themselves. We introduce them to computing, to computers, to STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So we go to the different schools, we teach them, we have them come over and we teach them. Because we believe if they love science, if they learn to love science, then they can go on to become better scientists. And hopefully, maybe just one day, one of them might figure out the cure to something like cancer. I know it's an overreach, or it might be a fool's dream, but we know very well that they are going to go on to do a lot of great things, and that will be because of we put that seed in them, we lit the candle for them. And we also understand that it is not just we lived in very underserved communities where sometimes access to technology is limited, and because of the newfound reputation that the country seems to be gaining, every day it's getting harder and harder to actually do some things. You wake up and you hear, oh, Nigeria has been banned from this, oh, Nigeria has been banned from that. And in some parts, it's kind of our fault. In some parts, it's a misunderstanding. But if we can teach this current generation the right way to go about things, then we are certain that they would have a much better access to technology. They will have a much better footing in the global economy. And well, it will just turn out and make everyone better for it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Patrick. I mean, you're seeing not only always a glance of the world and the lights, but you are also looking at the shadow of the world. Not mentioning that Nigeria is a very wealthy country on the one hand, but there is also poverty on the other side. And you're engaged in both. You're engaged in moving, of course, and helping the people, but you have to stay healthy. So, what are the three health habits or kind of say life hacks that help you stay energized, balanced, and really truly well, physically, but also mentally?
I have always been a little of an odd kid growing up. So My mother would always say I have more energy than the regular person. So which means it takes just very little to keep me happy, keep me right. But majorly, it's knowing I'm achieving something. Every time I turn around me, I want to see I'm achieving. And just knowing I have achieved something, I don't know, it makes me happy. And that happiness is, right, it's priority for me. Also, I try not to keep things in mind. That also goes a long way because it means I have very little to worry about. And of course, there are times when there are things to worry about, but you always trust that it's always going to come around and things are going to always turn out right. And majorly, I try my best to eat healthy. That's a little complicated when you live where I live, but right, one apple here, one banana there, and that's how we do it.
Thank you. Can you share a life experience that shaped you, who you are today? A moment you will never forget, and I'm sure there are some of them, and why it changed you?
To be very honest, I like to believe I am a sum total of my parts, which means there is not that one significant thing that, oh, if it wasn't this, I wouldn't be what I am, right? As an African kid, we are not just raised by a nuclear family, we are raised by the community in general, which means on the streets, you are learning, inside the home, you are learning, outside, you are learning. And we have this high standard for culture and morality and what is right and what is wrong, which means you could be going on the street and a random stranger will just walk up to you and spend 30 minutes of his time berating you because you did something wrong, right? And you get used to that. You are going and you are turning to the person right beside you and going, oh, there is something wrong with your kid, check on the kid. So growing up in that kind of culture and in that kind of environment, it's hard to say, oh, this is the one single thing that made me who I am, because that would be an insult to all the thousand others. But of course, I would also have to say a big thank you to my parents because they were a big influence. My parents, like many other African parents, were quite heavy-handed in the way they handled us, but we were also very troublesome kids growing up. So it's a miracle that we actually turned out the way we were. There were times when they had to actually, of course, they had to go nuclear on me, but I guess I'm grateful for it. A good example is I love to tell people I meet that I do not smoke, neither do I drink. And it's as a result of my parents. I remember I was 12 and my dad would catch me in the bathroom with a rolled up sheet of paper and a lighter. So I'd set it on fire and it was supposed to be my first attempt at smoking. So he would, of course, he thought something was burning, right? So he would run in, the bathroom was locked and he was panicking. He would bust the door open to find out what was wrong with me. I was in a room and it was on fire, you know, the regular. And then he noticed that I was the one lighting something and it was a cigarette. So he would drag me out of the room. And for the first 30 minutes after that, he's going to beat me stupid. And then by evening, he would call me and he's going to explain. He will begin to list out all the things that could happen to me, from addiction to health issues and everything with smoking. And to be honest, for a very long time, I did not smoke. And I don't know if it was because of the beating or if it was because of the advice. But together, there were so many of those kind of scenarios that helped build who I am and who many of us are. So I cannot say, oh, it's just this thing or that thing. I just know it's all the things they did and it's all the things I'm grateful for.
Thank you so much. And I thought so, that you would tell me, oh my God, there are so many hundred of things which come to my mind. As I think, I mean, with your work with the kids alone or with the underserved communities, I'm sure that you have plenty of situations where it's really something which is touching you. I mean, you're African, you are a world traveler, you're a cosmopolitan. Why is digital education the most powerful investment Africa can make for its future. Why isn't health education? Why is it digital education?
When it comes to health education, we already have things that work for us, right? They might not be the scientific proven, industrialized, or Western approach to it, but we've always had things that work for us, right? When I'm sick, majorly most of the times as Nigerians, our biggest issue is malaria, right? When I'm sick, the first priority is to get me to the hospital or maybe get me on a treatment plan or whatever. But before that even happens, my mother has taken me inside. She has put up some leaves together, cooked them in a pot, gotten a very big blanket and covered me up with it. And trust me, before I get to the hospital, I'm better, right? So, which means when it comes to health education, we have our way about it and it kind of works. But when it comes to digital education or the digital sphere in general, we started a race and we're the guys who actually were told to run after everybody had gone forward, right? So everybody started running and then they held us behind and then two or 3 minutes later they went go, right? And I'm not blaming anyone on that. I believe half of that might be our fault. Half of that is just education in general. But if we are going to actually have a leg up, if we truly want to compete, if we want to get our ideas, our cultures, our understanding out there, then we also have to play our part in making sure it gets there.
That sounds really good. And before the break starts, I would have one question for you. How can AI become a force for inclusion rather than increasing inequality?
How does AI become a force of inclusion? At the end of the day, AI is a sum total of what we truly are, right? It's the data we provide to AI that becomes the AI itself. And the data we provide is a reflection of ourselves. So if in itself the data you have is not inclusive, the AI you get will not be inclusive, which means at the end of the day, it's more of a question of how does our data become a source of inclusion? And with Africans, we had begun to realize that, with every AI system you have, AI tend to come with a bias or the other. And this is a bias that is naturally learned because all humans in their own nature are biased, right? Our understanding of our ignorance results into a situation where we cannot see, in some matters, we cannot see beyond our nose. On our nose. And of course, as Africans, we started doing things. Recently, I took on to mentoring students in building African folktales AI small language models. And in one of our calls, I asked them, why exactly do you think we are building this? And they said, oh, because we want to get an AI. I'm like, no, for a very long time, folktales have always been like a source of education. It has been a source of explaining things to the younger generation when you cannot say it outright, things like stranger danger and the likes. And our culture, our identity, it's all transmitted. And AI is an avenue, it's basically a vehicle to get this information out there. The current generation we have is not sitting with their grandparents beside firelight listening to the old stories. So we need to get the old stories to them in the way they still learn from them and it's still accessible to their own children.
Great, thank you so much. So I have some plenty of questions awaiting for you,
Of
but we
course.
have a small break of approximately 2 minutes, so stay tuned and see you afterwards.
Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, Patrick, we talked about some wonderful topics, just as, for example, your support to the children in Nigeria. What inspired you to do that? I mean, you could have just a wonderful career, earning a lot of money, just doing your stuff, not caring. But what brings you to that you are investing so much time into that?
Also, there isn't one single reason for that. I believe I am the sum total of who my people are, and I am because they are, and they are because I am. So, which means, think of it like the body. If one part of the body is not working well, then the rest of the body is most likely not working well. And then also, there was the community, there was my people, my parents, and then the mentors I found growing up. Every single person I met was in there to give something. So it had to learn from those who give and be selfish. So it just doesn't compute, right? And that's how it has always been. I cannot think of a time when not doing this was an option.
This is something I understand. What do you think? I mean, you're in the middle of African innovators, which understand that playing a leading role for the future is not something which you can do alone just by making profit, but needs you to also be involved in social things. So what do you think, what role will African innovators play in shaping also the global digital economy, having also the idea of ethics, having also the idea of human and the value of human in mind?
Well, I never want to talk much of the future because I believe the future in itself is a surprise and we should wait to see what it looks like. But I also understand that there are a lot of young Africans, right? Our median age is 18, right? So a lot of us are going into technology, a lot of us are going into innovation, a lot of us want to probably build the next big thing or just want to make sure that problem that they seem to be staring at just goes away. And how that is going to affect or influence the global economy in future, I'm also just waiting to see. I'm interested to see how it's going to play out. But I know very well that Nigeria is coming and everyone should sit down and observe because it's going to be beautiful.
Thank you. Yes. How can governments and educators collaborate to scale digital opportunities for young people and digital opportunities where they're not scared, where they're not thinking that they're not needed anymore?
Okay. Of course, right now, the government and individuals have been doing a lot. We have a lot of grants. We have a lot of organized trainings and the likes that have been created to expose us to digital innovation, to acquiring digital skills, and to digital literacy. And of course, we still try to do more. Rules are being put in place, some of them very good, some of them misunderstood, but we are shaping and we are trying our best to build in the right direction. Of course, there are also the universities, lecturers nowadays are taking more interest into technology. When I started out, when I went through university the first time, right, in my undergraduate studies, I remember back then they would teach us how to program, and they'll bring out a chalkboard and they'll try to write and write and write on the board, and I'll keep staring at them wondering how on earth does this work. And of course I'm back for my master's now, and I can see things are different. I can see we have better laboratories, the lecturers are getting more engaged in it, and people are realizing, oh, we have to do something because we also are part of this. So, and that is beautiful. And I can also see the government helping out. I can see a lot of grants, a lot of competitions. People are trying to get even the young ones to actually do something. And I believe that is already a lot. And I know that we are going to do more. I know the governments are revisiting the bills they have on ground, the regulations they have on ground to make things better for us, to make everything more inclusive. And hopefully we'll just continue in that direction.
Thank you. What has mentoring children taught you, yourself, and was an educator for you about leadership, creativity, and resilience? What have you learned from children?
Children are actually the best mirror when it comes to learning about creativity, innovation, leadership, and resilience. Because one, a child, first thing, I really love children because they keep you humble. A child doesn't, as adults, we gain filters as we grow up. You don't say this, you don't do this, you don't, but children don't know this, which means half of the times they are willing to call you out because you would call them out, right? And that is always very good for your ego, it's good for humility. And of course, you are trying to teach them to collaborate. You're trying to teach them it's not just about me, it's about us. And in the process of teaching them, it's not just about me. Sometimes you see yourself reflected in them, and that alone is enough to correct you or to instruct you on how to go about it. And sometimes they are always surprisingly having the answers to problems that seem to confuse even adults. So half of the, I remember there was a time I was, I met a kid, I went to get something at the store, and I met a kid, and the kid asked me a question, and I would sit on the floor and begin to explain to him. I think it was like 5. And the mother would look at me and go, oh, why waste your time? It's not like he understands. And I would smile at her and I would tell her, oh, he probably understands more than we do, right? And if I can give him the right direction, then he probably can give me the right direction. And that's how it has always been.
Thank you so much, Patrick. It was a pleasure having you. And it was a pleasure that you shared some of your experiences. I know that we could fill hours of further talk with that, what you do. And I'm pleased, I'm very happy that you give so much of your work to the good things to make the world a better place. So thank you so much. And if you want us that we spread also the word for the social initiatives you are moving, then we can do this later also via the social media. So thank you so much for being with us here.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. So that brings me now to the lady of today, which is Tao. Welcome, Tao, here at Yuko Health Radio, We Empower.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I would like to introduce you, Tao, with a few words. You are redefining the future of healthcare by making sex and gender-specific medical evidence accessible, actionable, and AI-ready. Which is a great combination, of course, because it makes sure that there is a status not only hidden somewhere of some researchers doing something somewhere, but it is getting more visible. As founder and CEO of Equal Care, you are building the evidence infrastructure that enables more precise, equitable, and clinical decisions. Your work bridges medicine, artificial intelligence, and responsible innovation to improve outcomes for millions. You demonstrate that the future of healthcare begins with better data, greater inclusion, and courageous leadership. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for your kind words and introduction.
Tao, we met some time ago, and of course, there was some time going by since then. And I hope that you will tell me, yes, Annabelle, we made a lot of improvement, not only in growing, of course, but also in shaping more of the mindsets of people, because I think this is still super, super important.
Yes, we did an advancement as society and as humans, and also we as Equal Care, I think we contributed to it. It's a little bit hard to measure change in mindset throughout the whole society and around the globe. But what we can notice it is that sex and gender specific medicine is going up in men being mentioned in media. When we started 2023, every month or every 2 weeks, somebody would send me an article. Oh, there was something about gender medicine, but that has stopped because you can see it every day on the media at least once, which is really, really an improvement to what we've seen 3 years ago. And there the media helps a lot.
Absolutely, I'm completely with you. We ask always at We Empower three questions, and I have an advantage to know them already. So, what does sustainable empowerment mean to you personally, and how do you live this to others, to environment, through your work or life daily?
So I think for me, sustainable empowerment means making patient lives better in the end and enhancing outcomes. And sustainable means for me that it's happening throughout the whole healthcare system, from the development in the wet lab to where it's delivered to the patient, and that we take into account sex and gender because we can enhance outcome by that. So for me, sustainable means throughout the system for everyone.
I like that very, very much, Tao, because in my bubbles, I often hear that sustainability is understood too short. And how you described, that is real sustainability, understanding it as a kind of circle, understanding that with a wide perspective, not just, oh, yes, I have to do some things here. And it's even more than just putting back the status of yesterday. It is really a kind of regeneration or also new regeneration, right? To a new status we have never reached, right?
Exactly.
And sorry, it's your turn.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah, it is really, if you want to add something to this question, it's your turn, because otherwise I come with the next already.
You can go on.
Okay. So what are the three health habits you have over the day that have you staying energized, balanced, and truly well? So from a really expert, I love to hear the answers.
So for me, it's first is sports. I like to run and I like to do long distance running. I'm not good at it, but I like to sign up for a race because then I have a schedule and a training plan and I have to stick to it. And that I think is like the thing that puts everything into place for me because then I'm more tired. I go to bed earlier. I'm an owl, but if I go and run, of course I'm tired. I go to bed earlier, so I wake up better the next morning. This is one habit. The second habit I think is hydration and nutrition. I try to stay very well hydrated during the day and eat a lot of fruit and raw vegetables. And the third, I think, is my social life. I love spending time with my family, taking care of my friends, and just yeah, have a good time outside of work so I can come back with more impact.
Sounds great. Sounds really great. And I think what is important is that these are things which is possible to integrate. No? I know many people saying, for example, oh, I now start getting really healthy and I start with Qigong in the morning and the meditation, and I will start with my iPhone only half an hour after waking up, and I do the cold plunge. And in the end, nothing happens after a week because it's too much. So I think it's perfect how you integrated it. And also that you implement something like running, which is not like a sports or like skiing or golfing, where you have to carry things through the world. As I think, I mean, you are also a traveler, and being on the road means also being a bit flexible. And what you said, I like to having a training plan. Yes, having something, a goal where you're working on. I think this is super important. Many people forget about this, that it must be a really concrete goal, right? Not something like, oh, I have to feel fitter, or I have to feel better, or just really inconcrete, right? It must be really something you can really rely on, and which is so concrete that you can feel it, see it, no? I know Tao from our last meeting. It is a while ago, but I remember that you have also some really deep experience which brought you on to that what you do now. And can you share a life experience that shaped you, who you are today, or a moment you will never forget, and why it changed you?
Well, I think the most cutting moment for me was the sickness of my father. When I was 21, he was sick and he laid in the ICU and nobody knew what he had. He just had a random inflammation in his brain. And it took 4 weeks to diagnose him. And he got out of it alive. He still could have some quality of life, but of course he needed assistance and he couldn't be home alone. But he lived another 15 years to see his daughters get married, meet his first grandchildren. So I'm very grateful for this. But what was very cutting was my father was suffering so much. And 5 years after my father was, no, 7 years after my father was sick, I went to New Zealand and did some mountaineering in a course. And I met a doctor who came from London. And I told him 10 seconds of my father's story, and he diagnosed him. And I'm like, how do you know? And he's like, he's a Southeast Asian adult with a random inflammation. It's 90% it's tuberculosis. And it took in my mid German town where I grew up, it took the doctor 6 weeks to figure out, and I needed to help them to figure it out. Because I analyzed the data by sitting 12 hours in the ICU without nothing to do. And that really shattered my belief in medicine and made doctors humans. I know why it happened, because they didn't have the knowledge, they weren't trained, they didn't have the experience. We were pretty, I always say we were the only Asians in the town, which is not true, but pretty much. And I just realized that knowledge needs to be distributed much better across the system, because doctors are humans and only know what they know. And that fueled me to go into healthcare. But yeah, it was a little bit dormant around my consulting career. I always worked in life sciences, wanted to have impact on patients' life. But when I started Equal Care, it really, I remembered this, and this really fuels my everyday.
Wow, this is a story, which I can only confirm. And I think what you said, we are only humans, and also the experts are only humans. I mean, that means so much to me, as it means sometimes the medical doctors are in a bad mood. Sometimes they are not as good as they should be, of course. Sometimes they want to propose that they're better than they are. So there are so many situations where we have to say, yes, AI can play a bigger role than we think it could be, with not saying the humans are worse, but with saying that with the support of AI, we can help much more people, right? So, I have plenty of questions waiting for you after the commercial. And so we see each other back in approximately 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real. But that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
Thank you, Tao, for sharing this great story with us before the break. What do you think? How will AI reshape evidence-based medicine over the next decade?
Well, as we said before, humans are humans and doctors are humans. So the knowledge of the body of knowledge existing today is, I would not expect a doctor to know everything. But of course, the doctor should know that he doesn't know or she doesn't know everything and go and consult with AI because a large language model can search millions of papers and give you an answer according to 20 different factors. And that is beyond the human capacity. So I think AI has the potential to give a medicine that is much more precise, much faster, and more adequate for the patient. And if we do it right, it will be also make the work of the doctor easier. So my biggest hope is that we improve healthcare within the next decade.
I hope so too. Why is gender-specific data still one of healthcare's biggest blind spots?
Well, data that is feeding health AI today has several problems, but the problems that we at Ethical of Care focus on, we come from a medicine where the patient is a patient. She or it's not a he, it's not a she. It doesn't matter if he or she is 18 or 98, and the person could be anywhere in the world. It doesn't matter to the medicine or the paradigm in medicine. And that is also how we have published papers over the last four since the beginning of publishing. So even if there is sex-specific or racial-specific or region-specific information, usually it's somewhere in the appendix or somewhere in the middle, we cannot find it. But if we want to do a medicine that is more precise, we need to look at sex, we need to look at the age, we need to look at the region they come from and ethnicity. And so we can find this information today, but it's super dispersed. It's anywhere, and there's no standard to report sex or racial or regional specific endpoints. And so it's hard to find for humans, but it's also hard to find for machines. If today somebody claims they're using medical evidence, usually they throw in the abstract into the model or feed it somewhere in. But if we want to look at the sex, this is in 90% not in the abstract. And if you have to dive into the paper, that's super hard. So, that is the problem of the databases of evidence-based medicine. It usually relies on the abstract.
It's interesting because talking to experts about why does it come with this inequality and that you have rare data from women, and they say, okay, there are less tests done with women. Okay, and then the next question is, okay, but why have you done less tests with women? And then the answer is, okay, so if you do tests with women, then it could get on the eggs, and it gets on the eggs, then it's an information which damages the eggs. Where on the other hand, if you do it with men, their sperms, they are reproducing the sperms every 7 days, then the information gets refreshed, so it's not getting on that. Would you say this is something where you can say, yes, okay, I understand, let's continue, or what would you say to these people?
Well, it really depends on the drugs. There are millions, thousands of drugs out there that don't have impact on female fertility. So if, of course, the companies, the pharma companies that are testing this, they don't want to pay millions of dollars if they get sued. And this is just a risk aversion, but you could start by testing on female mice. Many mice, some medications are only tested on male mice. Of course, you will never know if this goes to the ovaries or not. So, and of course, female fertility is more fragile than male in many cases, but it is so important to do it early on in your testing and not wait until your phase three. And so you could test the impact of female fertility on female mice if you test on female mice.
I absolutely agree with you. I mean, there's a startup currently, I'm not sure if you heard about it, which is currently developing a kind of box of organs. They say, okay, we create box of organs, a
Yes.
box, a female box and a male box, and then we inject things or try to probe without having any consequences on the human, because it is no human. And there are people against this saying, hey, come on, this is nearly a human. And how can you just, how can you, from ethical reasons, create a box of organs for testing? This sounds like a weird thing. What would you think about that? Is this maybe a solution also for these people argumenting against this? Oh, testing with women is hard.
Well, I would never argue that testing on women is hard. It is, because we can get pregnant, we have long-term fertility issues, and women are less risk averse. They usually are the caretakers. So, oh, do I take this medication that could knock me out and then I cannot be there for my family? With men, it's a little bit there, like, okay, I take it. It's giving me money. And also, testing with women is also hard because they're less mobile. They cannot travel 200 kilometers every week. It's harder for them than for men in average, let's say. So I would never argue that testing on women is hard. Coming back to the organ on a chip or human on the chip, I would think it's good because we have an awareness that for each cell. And for the people that have an ethic concern about this chip, to be honest, then they should have it singly tested today, which is good. What is good about the chip is you just do it once and then you can see all the cells. But it's been done for decades on all of the different cells. So just because we put them together doesn't make them more human for me.
I'm completely with you. What would you say? I mean, we had during COVID also many women suffering more from COVID, also because of the injections they got, as they got the same amount than, for example, a 50 kilo woman, 30 years old, got the same amount than a 120 kilo man, 2 meters height. Is this something where we have to think around or think differently, and how could this go?
I think the rules have to change. The regulator needs to be more aware because I'm the one person, I'm the 50 kilo woman that got this injection and then was knocked out for 10 days.
Yeah.
In the end, I didn't get the fourth or the fifth shot. I just isolated when I had COVID because there was no business case. I was sick for 3 days with COVID, and if I get the vaccine, I was sick for 10 days. I was very cautious, of course, not to infect anybody, but it was just so. It knocked me out of this world, to
Yeah.
be honest. And
Yeah.
from the rules have to change because these side effects are costing society so much. I couldn't work for 10 days.
Yeah.
So I'm very, the regulation should for sex-specific dosing or for sex-specific dosing should start with vaccination. But the companies will never invest in a double clinical trial if the rules don't change.
Absolutely, I'm completely with you. And staying with these rules, what is interesting is I did a survey some time ago where I ask the people, the users, the customers about the tests which are written on a cream or on something you take into you put on your face or somewhere else on your skin. And it says normally 6 of 10 women said there is a difference, for example. 8 of 10 women or 4 or 5 women said this and that. And then we changed that. And interestingly, we ask, what do you think is more scientific and where would you trust more? If it's written 5 of 6 women or 6 of 10 women, or if it's written 89% of 100% or 89 women or 100. Interestingly, most of them said the 5 of 6 or the 4 of 6. And then we said, but isn't this weird? Because it's a much lower target, a much lower group, testing group than having 100. So they said, yeah, but everybody says it's a 4 of 6. We are used to this. Is this shocking? Is this normal? What would you say about that?
I think it's normal. It's very human when you say 98% of the cohort. This sounds much more untangible when you say instead of five or six women. So, and if you go to the pharmacy or wherever you buy your product, you are not there to go and do math. So I can fully relate to this, that they find it more appealing if it says five out of six. We have the same. Well, what we do is a lot of scientific data, and we do a lot of scientific communication. So sometimes it's even hard to say, hey, a good trial is not 50-50. People don't, this is a very hard concept. A good clinical trial is not 50-50. If you have Alzheimer's and you have two-thirds women and one-third men, a good trial is according to the existing prevalence. It's two-thirds, one-third. And alone this concept, which is the key of gender medicine and representative trials, it's very hard to convey. It's very hard to convey. And because people say, oh, it always has to be 50-50. No, it doesn't. That's like wrong science. And but the moment we start with statistics and science, it's really hard for the general public of people. So six, five out of six is very understandable.
Thank you. To make it understandable and really clear to our listeners, what exactly is your startup doing? Can you please explain?
Yes. So what we do is we do a structured data model. And as I said before, everything about sex, ethnicity, and age is somewhere hidden in the medical publications. What we do is we take out the sentences. We write it into a structured data model. We annotate it like, oh, this is for female, 40 to 60. This is a gene. This is the expression. So AI can read it. Because if you have to read the whole paper, you will spend a lot of energy and tokens on doing so. You will have a lot of interference because you have 10 million words that don't belong, are not what you're looking for. So we're actually taking the existing body of research, we slice this into a structured data model. We know exactly from which paper it came, and we offer this to the world so they can use it. And how you should use it, for example, you could ask it questions via a chat if you're a researcher or a doctor. You could build a rag on top of your existing solution, so every answer gets proven against this data again. And my dream is that one day somebody will use it to train a foundational model.
Wow. How does it come that you are putting so much energy into this? Because I mean, I think it's great. It's great. Because we need exactly that. And even I mean, I'm a member in some healthcare movements, but exactly this topic where you're relying on, this topic is a kind of blind gap in all discussions. And I'm always shocked to listen to that, because this is for me groundwork what you are doing. This is so important. If we don't change that what you are doing, then everything what we do in research will build on something which is false or which will extend the blind gap. And even with, or especially with AI, your work is so important, because otherwise this blind gap will not only stay, but people will forget about maybe what is necessary, right?
Exactly. As you said, we put so much energy in this because we think this is what will change the system, where we have the biggest lever to change the system. As I said before, I don't expect doctors to know everything. If they want to do sex-specific medicine, they have to have double the knowledge. And this is humanly impossible with the shortages of time and resources in the system. And I always say I want to be like the biggest chocolate producer in the world. This is Barry Callebaut without doing. Nobody knows this brand. Everybody has eaten it. I swear to you, 99% of the population have eaten something from Barry Callebaut, but nobody knows this brand because they deliver to Nestle, they deliver to all the big Cadbury, all the big chocolate brands, but nobody knows them. And this is how we want to become, that our data is in everything in the healthcare system, so it gets used. Nobody needs to know us.
What gives you hope that that this happens, that healthcare change the way?
I think there's I put a lot of in the younger generation. There's much more awareness. The Gen Z individual culture helps because, well, we can be more precise and do more medicine more precise. I think this is, yeah, the time helps because the younger generation is actually creating the demand for it.
Absolutely. And I'm happy that you're saying this. I think you're so right. I see it working with them, and I'm really, really convinced, as you said. One last question. Where should regulators, researchers, and entrepreneurs collaborate more closely? And how can you be the bridge maybe for that?
Wow, that's a big question. I think there needs to be, like, throughout in the collaboration, an awareness of the economical business case of sex and gender specific medicine. Throughout, for the regulated, means we have better medication in the market. For pharma, it means we have a de-risked pipeline if we test on women early on. And for doctors, means I can treat my patients better, and the patient has to know I will get a better treatment if this is sex specific. But we need to, so, and once we have this awareness, then I think the collaboration will come from alone because it's a huge business or economical case for everyone around this table.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Tao. I hope that I can support you, that we can cooperate in the future also even more, because I think women power has to come together, stronger together. And I thank you very much for being here and sharing your insights with us. I hope so that we can that you can we can spread the word also for you if you want to, and if you wish, then we can inform also our listeners about this. So thank you very much, Tao. Thank you very much, Patrick. So this is this ends, of course, the weekly radio show, and I have hope that you have all taken something away for yourself or interest to go further into these topics. And yeah, the weekly radio show is here for people to celebrating the strength, resilience, and limitless potential of us around the globe. Join us again next week as we continue on this empowering journey, sharing real stories, upliftment, and empowerment opportunities for you. Role models and your presence and engagement means the world to us, and we appreciate you taking the time to tune in. So remember, this time is a gift for you to discover new inspiration, embrace the exciting insights, and find the motivation to live life to the fullest. Don't hesitate to get involved. Your voice is valued always. And together we can make a difference. Thank you for being part of the community. Until next time, keep shining and empowering others. Together we rise. Thank you.